Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
They say life is stranger than fiction.
And they're up to about 80% efficiency in terms of the water retention and the water cycle.
It sounds like a significant amount of the water I'm drinking. Oh, this is me and my mates, recycled.
But sometimes what we see in movies or read in books is so incredible that it obviously couldn't be possible. Or could it?
And we know we can do this. There's stuff starting to come out in wearables. Energy can be generated by people walking around that is stored in batteries and can be used to power things.
Welcome to Sci-Fi Sci-Fact. I'm Brian Crump, and this is a podcast where we take science fiction's strangest ideas, weirdest elements, most unfeasible plot drivers, and explore if they could actually happen in real life. Maybe they already have. And in every episode, we bring in a scientist from New Zealand's MacDiarmid Institute to explain the theories behind some of fiction's more fantastic flights of fancy. In this episode, Associate Professor Jeff Wilmot, MacDiarmid Institute Deputy Director for Commercialization and Industry Engagement, and Associate Professor of Physics at Auckland University, gives us his scientific take on the still suit, the water-saving suit that recycles sweat and other fluids into drinkable water in the deep deserts of Frank Herbert's Dune series.
We are in your hands, Doctor. Your gift of the still suits is much appreciated. Would you give us an explanation of their workings?
Well, this is a still suit of Fremen manufacture, the most efficient type on Arrakis. Basically, it's a high-efficiency filter and heat exchange system. Perspiration passes through the first layer and is gathered in the second, where salt is separated. Breathing and walking provide the pumping action. The reclaimed water circulates to catch pockets from which you can drink through this tube. With a Fremen suit in good working condition, life can be sustained for weeks, even the deep desert,
sire. Now, given you're a director of commercialization and industry engagement, maybe you're already working on a prototype of this.
No, absolutely not. But, it's definitely the case of if we could make one, we could sell one. You know, it would make a big difference to export markets if we could get some of this technology up and running.
So tell me a little bit more about how the still suit works and what it works for.
Yeah, well, so In the story, June, as the grab there, the soundbite there said, the world Arrakis is a desert world, and so the suits are designed to basically retain water for the wearers. So in the story, they're designed by the local people on the planet, or the indigenous people, if you like, the Fremen is what they're called, and so these people have like adapted over, I guess, centuries to retain water in the desert and to be able to survive. That's the basic premise of why they want to retain water, and they need a suit to be able to do this. So they manufacture these suits that do this very efficiently.
And how does the suit? Because it's all bodily fluid, right? Everything gets recycled. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, there's the most famous passage about it, or the most extensive passage about it from the book, which at the end of it says, you know, when you have one of these suits in good working order, you won't lose more than a thimbleful of moisture in a day. You know, even if you're in the most harsh desert on this planet, you won't lose any of your bodily fluids to the atmosphere.
Now, we sweat to keep ourselves cool. So how does this still suit? Actually, before I ask you that, why is it called a still suit? Because they don't stand around doing nothing. They're moving around in this thing, aren't they? It gives you lots of mobility.
Yeah, it's a nice name actually, because I like to think of it as kind of a prohibition derived name, because the, Frank Herbert wrote the original novel. And you know, stills were known in that time as what you made moonshine with. So you know, coming from the word distillation, so when you separate out different fractions of fluids.
Yes, now I get it. Yeah, sorry, I was a bit slow on that one. Yes, distillation, because it. So what? But okay, the next question: how does the still suit get your salty sweat and turn it back into water you can drink?
Well, I mean, that's a good question. It that's where we start to go from, away from reality to fiction. Of course, in the novel, Frank Herbert can say, you know, it just does this. But we do have like various technologies on that we use from day to day that can do bits and pieces of what the still suit does. So that first one was desalination you asked about, right? And we know for a start that we have desalination plants, right? That can produce drinking water from seawater. They use these in Australia. And there's lots of similar technologies that are out there for purifying water.
The thing is, though, doesn't distillation, desalinization, need a lot of energy? You got to heat the water up, turn it into steam, then condense it again, and then you got fresh water, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So this is kind of the bit that gets hard for us. This is why we don't have still suits kicking around on our planet at the moment, because to do distillation, it takes energy, so you have to somehow... If in these municipal drinking water plants, they have these big pumps that create energy, that use energy. And so you need to apply some energy to pump water through some membranes in order to separate out the salts. So that's all fine. You can do that in a municipal plant, but doing it in a layer of soot next to your skin is a completely different story.
How then might we be able to do that? For example, you've got the situation where I'm assuming that Arrakis gets a lot of sunshine. And so what if you're able to get, but hang on, normally you if you're going to get the water to evaporate, you've got to get it to evaporate to lose its salt, but then you don't want it to evaporate off the body.
Yeah, that's right. So... Well, there's a couple of things about the evaporation, and one is that, as was mentioned, I think you mentioned at the start, Brian, was, you know, the sweating, the perspiration is there to cool you down, so that when the water evaporates off your skin, that cools you down. And so if you then capture the water again, you've retained the heat in the system, and you haven't necessarily cooled everything down. So that adds a kind of extra energy requirement if you want to keep cool in your suit. And then on top of that, you've got the separation for the desalination and pumping things around and so on. All of that takes energy. So in terms of what the book says about the energetics, it suggests wearables, right? So what we know now as wearables. So they say that motions of the body, especially breathing and some osmotic action, provide the pumping force. And we know we can do this. This is, there's stuff in the lab at the moment these days and starting to come out in wearables where energy can be generated by people walking around, right? So the friction on your shoes, for example, can create energy that is stored in batteries and can be used to power things. We have lots of examples of sensors and so on in wearables where the battery and the sensor and everything is stored in a piece of fabric, essentially.
However, would we be able to generate enough energy to get the salt out of the water and still keep the water with us and still keep us cool?
I mean, can you do enough? It starts to get really hard. I mean, at the moment on Earth, we can't do enough with this type of really thin fabric and these types of demands on the system. When you look at where the energy is coming from, though, you know, they're harvesting the energy from the motion of the body. And so in a way, they're only limited by the kind of the energy output, the mechanical energy output of the body. And this is something that isn't really a limit on what you can do, because these people on this faraway fictional planet, I guess, can eat and move as much as you like to produce this energy. I think if you do the sums now for the technologies we've got, the answer's no. You know, you can't realistically get enough energy to do the separation. And that's why, as I say, we're not wandering around in still suits.
What if we were a little bit less ambitious about matching what Frank Herbert does in his imagination, and we still needed quite a lot of energy, but if we had a backpack that would store that energy and also maybe do some of the work involved in desalinating the water, perhaps we could? I mean, it would be easy enough to collect the H2O as we sweat it, wouldn't it? It would just, and storing it, it's, if we had some kind of device, machine behind us, a portable desalination plant on our backs, would that work?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of the more like the direction we're heading in at the moment. I mean, yes, definitely you can retain water. I mean, just wander, put on a plastic rubbish sack and walk around for a while, and you know, you understand that you can retain water.
Just wear an oil skin on a humid day, yes.
Or one of those ponchos you wear to the rugby. So you can, you know, you can retain water. That's fine. The backpack idea, though, I think probably the nearest parallel is when we look at space travel and where we're going with that. And so, if you look at what, say, NASA has been doing relatively recently, they have kind of fridge-sized units on the old space shuttle that are kind of evaporative stills that would separate out the urine from the astronauts, and therefore and those things have to run off the batteries and the solar power of the space station. So it's all self-contained. And they're up to about, I think, 80% efficiency in terms of, you know, water, or maybe a bit higher, in terms of the water retention and the water cycle there. So that's something that maybe doesn't quite fit on your back, but it's smaller and it's self-contained and it's distributed, and that we are already able to do.
Okay, 80% retention. Does that mean that 80% of their water is urine that's been purified? Or more,
yeah,
or less.
Not sure about the.
Not
overall,
sure if my maths is might be a little bit dodgy, but it sounds like a significant amount of the water I'm drinking. Oh, this is me and my mates recycled.
But this
looks
happens.
Pretty clear.
You know, we have now in the States, there's some fairly direct kind of municipal water supplies that are potable water that have come straight from sewage and been purified for long enough and extensively enough that it's essentially drinkable.
Do you know what happens with perspiration then and our exhalation in the space station? Because actually a lot of the H2O we exude is through our breath, isn't it?
Yeah. So I'm not sure about the space station. I mean, it's something that features in June, because they, in those suits, they specifically mention about having mouth coverings. And, you know, you're supposed to breathe out through your nose and in through your mouth, or the other way around, I can't remember. And, you know, that's obviously the filters are designed to work that way. I think something to kind of mention about the separation stuff is, and things like what we currently use in the space station, is that a lot of it's based on filters. And when you have filters, they clog up or they wear out, and you have to dispose of them. So these things have kind of a working lifetime. Whereas in this science fiction world, these things don't wear out. They wear these still suits on and on forever, and that's something that's probably particularly difficult to do in real life compared to what happens in the book.
There is another thing that just occurred to me, Jeff, and that is that the air that we breathe generally has quite a lot of moisture in it, doesn't it? I mean, we've got, that's what humidity is. It's water vapor in the air. Would it be possible for us to breathe in and actually harvest some of the water? Because we don't get that, when we breathe that air in, we don't take the water, do we? We breathe it out again. Maybe some of that we could somehow hold on to and extract the water from it?
Yeah, humidity is variable. If you're in Auckland or Northland right now, it's pretty high. And when you're breathing in quite a lot of water. But I guess the assumption you'd make on a desert planet or a desert environment is that it's very low humidity. So the amount of water that, you know, if you took that face mask off and breathed in the desert air, the amount of water you breathe in would be very small. And the amount of water you breathe out is always quite high, right? Because it's been in the body. So these things are a matter of balance. And you know, yes, when you breathe in on a humid day, you're taking in water, but when you're breathing out, you're breathing out more. It's, you know, it's very humid that your output of air, because it's been circulating around in your lungs.
Of course, some people argue you don't need to sterilize or purify urine, just drink it. It just doesn't taste very nice.
Yep, away you go.
You've gone all quiet on me, Jeff.
Well, no, that's if your listener wants to go do that, they can do that.
Yes, right. Okay, now that's a bit of a segue. Let's get back on track here. Mars. Now, I'm guessing Mars is a very dry planet, right? We would need some technology like this if we were to survive on Mars for weeks or months, wouldn't we?
Well, so you can make a segue to another movie, right, which is The Martian, which came out 2 or 3 years ago, and, it, you know, with Matt Damon. And in that, you know, water retention actually features quite heavily in that movie, because he starts growing plants inside this big tent, and, you know, he has to produce water in order to do that. And the way he does that actually in that case is burns all this fuel he's got from a jetpack essentially and produces water that way. So, yeah, I mean, you know, when we talk about before about NASA's systems for the space shuttle, I mean, that's the kind of prototypes for what we'll potentially be using when we do manned space travel over, you know, to Mars and to other planets. So it's something that's kind of really important for those self-contained systems, and that we are getting better at, but perhaps don't quite have the systems we could for those long-range voyages at the moment. All the material science that goes into, you know, making these things better is really, you know, interesting and active in terms of how do you make really thin, flexible, really efficient materials that can do separation, do wicking of water, do energy production. That those are all really interesting kind of active research areas.
I'm going to try and squeeze in two more questions, Jeff. One is, do you know at the moment with the International Space Station, which is, I guess, that the object at the moment which supports human life but is separate from the Earth's environment, how self-sufficient that is? How often do they have to take more water or more oxygen up so that you can live on it, in it?
I mean, short answer is I don't know that one, Brian. I imagine they're doing their best to try and be self-sufficient, though. I think there'd be some interesting stuff going on if you look into it a bit deeper.
As we get better at this stuff, we might be able to do what we need to do at a smaller level. And maybe at one point, all this could be done in a backpack.
Yeah, right. And I think, the interesting aspect is, do we need it in a backpack? And if you live in New Zealand, you think, well, probably, you know, we're a very pluvial country and all that. We don't really need water retention technologies. But if you go over to Australia and you fast forward a few more years and climate change gets a bit more intense, you know, preservation of water is going to become more and more important and more valuable. You know, we already have droughts here that are getting worse. So, yes, these technologies are important, they're interesting, and they're developing. So I think that's the trajectory anyway.
We haven't talked about one aspect of the still suit. Well, at least one aspect of bodily functions, and that is the more solid waste. Does the still suit recycle that stuff?
Look, you know what it says in the book is just that the urine and feces are processed. And what it doesn't say is, you know, what happens to the solid waste. So once you've processed something and you've separated it out into liquid and solid, does it, I don't know, leave a pallet of dry turd behind, or does it somehow reuse that? That's not covered in the book, but certainly would have to be a consideration for a real suit.
You wouldn't think it'd be worth, I mean, it's just extra weight otherwise. You just get this, dry sort of waste, maybe turn into some kind of fuel.
I guess that's the problem, the fuel issue. Yes. I guess one of the other things about the book is that they have this kind of magic spice on this planet that they all eat that sustains them. So maybe there's something in that allows them to eat and still makes the suit work.
And maybe it makes for high energy turds when you get rid of all the water.
Maybe.
I've stunned you again, Jeff. Sci-Fi Sci-Fact is hosted by me, Brian Crump, and produced by Andrew Robertson. It's made possible with the enterprise of the brilliant minds at the McDiarmid Institute. You should be able to find the podcast on any podcast app, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. It's also available on the RNZ website, rnz.co.nz. Thanks for listening.
The softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.